Two touchdowns for former Gamecock Damier Byrd last night up in Charlotte, helping the Carolina Panthers knock off Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans 27-17. It was Watson's NFL debut. It was Christian McCaffrey's NFL debut. And it leads us off this morning. Hope your Thursday's off to a good start. Thanks for tuning us in here on the live radio experience that is the early game here on 107.5 The Game. I'm Tim Hill. He's Bill Gunter, Dakota Watson, punching the buttons for us, answering your phone calls at 803-404-6100, the Capital Hyundai Capital Chevrolet phone line. He is filling in for Jen Jensen, who will be out a few days. We're looking forward to her getting back. You got a text message. We got a text message from her last night.
Yes, so we'll have her read on air when she returns.
It was possibly a little altered, a little loopy after some back surgery yesterday, but good to see she was in good spirits.
Yes, we wish her the best. But yes, she will.
I still
be.
Have no idea what the text message said. But
yeah,
I'm
the only thing I got out of it was that she's okay and that either her or one of her animals sent us a text message to let us know that she's okay.
Could be a combination of the two.
Wasn't sure. I wasn't positive who sent us the text. Was it Jen or was it an animal, one of her dogs, that sent us the text to inform us she's okay? So I think she's all right, though.
27-17, the final. You watched all of the game last night.
Beautiful. It was great.
I mean, what was your motivation for watching the second half? Because I watched the first half. And I wanted to watch it long enough to see Deshaun Watson play a little bit. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see Christian McCaffrey get some action there. I wanted to continue to see Damier Byrd. But I mean, when Joe Webb comes in the first quarter, you know, it's a preseason game. What did you think? Why'd you watch the entire thing?
Other options on television last night?
Mm-hmm.
Kneel.
I'm sorry?
Nothing. Nada.
Is that like nil?
Mm-hmm.
The kneel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wondered if you were.
That's
doing
exactly
Colin
what it is.
Thing.
You figured it out. You were on top of it.
Okay.
So yep, you knew exactly what I was saying. And there was nothing else on television last night. And I always like watching some of the late parts of these games because you said, like I told you last night, there was a Brandon Whedon sighting late in the game, and I went, hey, that guy used to be a starter for a couple different teams, and how about that? Look at him still scratching around in the NFL. Doing a few things. So that was kind of fun to watch a little bit. But no, just some football last night late in the game. And, you know, as you mentioned, Deshaun Watson, watching him, Damier Byrd late in the game and seeing how he did is a very good performance for him. And a guy that it'll be interesting to see. You feel like after last year, he had a pretty good preseason last year. You wonder if he will be a guy who, maybe it's not with the Panthers, but after that preseason performance, if he has another one to go along with it, if he makes a 53-man active roster this year and is able to be a contributor somewhere along the line.
Well, that he started as the punt returner, a good sign there, right? He returned a few punts there, did fine, I thought. Nothing outstanding, but a couple of punt returns for 19 yards, a long of 13. So that he was the first punt returner was a good sign, I thought. And then he ends up scoring that long touchdown, a 50-yarder from Joe Webb. That was relatively early in the ballgame, in the second quarter. Certainly things very much in doubt. Damier Byrd last night, final line, 4 catches, 98 yards with the 2 touchdowns. Certainly his best performance, I think, as a pro. He could be one of those guys. I felt like he came to Carolina as a track guy, right? He's from New Jersey. He came here where it was a speed thing. He was known as a speed guy, and he didn't look like a football player to me. He looked like a track guy. He wasn't really big. Not that you have to be really big at wide receiver, but to be a really good receiver in the SEC, I think a guy like Kenny McKinley, for instance, was really the exception. He was also kind of thin.
Mm-hmm.
Damier Byrd was always the speedster and never really, in my opinion, caught his stride at the University of South Carolina as a receiver. He was pretty good, but would you agree with the assessment of his college career? Never a star by any means.
But he also played with some really, really good wide receivers.
Which you would think might open things up a little bit more for him.
Maybe, but I mean, you go back, and I mean, you look at the guys that he was playing with, and also the running backs he was playing with, and I think, which to me, he just wasn't the focal point of the offense. He was a large part of it; he was a big chunk of it, and certainly had his moments. I guess through recruiting, following it through recruiting, I never would have considered him a track guy. I knew that he would be a valuable commodity for the football team in terms of the speed and what he brought to the team, and. You know, he was able to do that at times. I think the catch that always stands out to me, I believe it was him, was the one against Georgia early on, almost the second play of the game, right, where it looked like it was going to be picked off.
At Williams-Brice.
He comes down with it and sets South Carolina up in deep in their own territory and is able to lead to the first touchdown. But, you know, had a lot of very good moments and certainly shined at times. But, yeah, I would probably say that it was never what you would label as the focal point of the offense.
So he's been with the Carolina Panthers now for a couple of years, but never really broken through and been a consistent part of the offense. But you're right, with some of they had some defections at wide receiver. You look at the wide receivers that played last night. Kelvin Benjamin had two catches, and then after that, it's all Austin Duke had two catches last night, and then it's all one catch for a bunch of other guys. And when you have a guy like Devin Funchess, who's supposed to be one of your contributors, and then after that, the Panthers, I think, they're certainly looking for guys to step up there. Kelvin Benjamin looked pretty good early on, by the way. His first big game, did you notice, after he threw down a defensive back who ended up making the tackle about 14 yards down the field?
Jonathan Joseph?
No,
I didn't. No. I didn't.
Jonathan Joseph, by the way, is who was defending on the touchdown catch.
Right.
He didn't have much of a chance. It was a perfect throw and catch just over the opposite shoulder. And Benjamin's about 8 inches taller than Joseph. But on the one of the first plays of the game, it was Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt converging to make the tackle 14 yards down the field for the Houston Texans against the Carolina Panthers. Watt, by the way, plays one series, I think, is done. Luke Kuechly played six plays and was done. Cam Newton did not play. A lot of guys did not play in this thing, as you would expect in the first preseason game. But the debut of Deshaun Watson is getting the headlines this morning. What did you think? To me, I thought he was the guy that I had seen. I wasn't overly impressed or I wasn't underwhelmed either. I thought that was about what I was expecting last night, what I saw from him.
Yeah, I don't know what I was expecting in terms of Watson to come out and do, because like you said, it's a preseason game, and he didn't go against the starters the whole time, nor did he get to play with his starters. And so,
but he did play a bunch, by the way. His numbers: 15 out of 25, 179 yards passing, and a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. 15 and 25, and I thought he showed some things to where he can be the future of that organization, and you can put some good pieces around him. And obviously, they're building a terrific defense there in Houston and have got two of the better defensive ends in the league. And so, with that in mind, yeah, I kind of just was more interested to see. I think the only way last night that maybe is if he'd have come out and had a very bad performance. Because I think most people are going to be like me, if he played really well, you're going to go, well, it was against the backups of the Panthers, and he was still playing with the backups of his own. But I thought it was a solid performance and gives them a good starting step to move forward in his progression and whether or not he can overtake Tom Savage at some point. And it's not like, by the way, it's not like Savage was bad last night. Tom Savage
out of 11, yeah,
was perfectly fine as well. And so if you're Houston, you're probably coming away this morning saying, okay, we might be in a good position quarterback-wise going into 2017.
Mm-hmm, except if you don't want the quarterback controversy to be out there.
Well, that's another one.
That's going to be out there for sure. A lot of number four Houston Texans jerseys in the stands last night. A lot of Clemson fans in the stands last night. And it was from what I saw from the crowd cutaways, it was very much an exhibition NFL atmosphere last night in Charlotte. A lot of people just kind of, hanging out. That's what it was.
Webb's going long downfield, and it's caught for a touchdown. A 50-yard touchdown catch by Demir Byrd.
Mick Mixon on the call for the Carolina Panthers radio network last night. It was an impressive play. I think one that Panthers fans would like to see during the season for sure. What do you think? Do you think Demir Byrd will be able to make the Panthers roster and contribute this year in particular?
That's a good question. Just because, okay, you feel like your three main targets right now, Benjamin Funchess and then obviously Greg Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does.
Two of those guys technically being receivers, so that opens up another spot.
But, I mean, that's what I'm still saying. Those are going to be your three main targets. And then, again, last night, Christian McCaffrey obviously being utilized more from the running back position. We'll see where he fits into that offense if they choose to kind of line him up in different positions and split him around.
Let's stop with McCaffrey right there. Did he convince you last night he's a legit NFL running back? Because, to me, he did. And one of his first carries was basically between the tackles. He showed you that he finishes with seven carries, 33 yards. I think it was like a 12-yard run or something where he just, it looked like, made more out of what was there and felt pretty comfortable doing it.
I mean, when you say a legitimate NFL running
back. Like an every down guy.
Yeah, but I mean, how effective will he end up being? I think he can do that. I think the question is going to be how effective he can end up being. And you're right, last night, 7 carries, 33 yards. His longest was 12 yards. We'll see kind of how that works out for him as they move forward. But to go back to Damier Byrd, I think he's got a great chance to be kind of that other weapon in their offense, kind of the speed guy. I don't know if it's fair to say, but is he the guy that replaces Ted Ginn Jr.?
Well, he's not Ted Ginn, right?
Right.
Ginn came out as a really high first-round draft pick, mm-hmm. I believe, and disappointed greatly for years and years and years, and I think has had his most productive years as a Panther, actually. He's not quite that guy, but he does bring some of those skills and the breakaway speed, but and then the return game.
Right.
Because he didn't do that much at Carolina, correct?
No, he was not. And I was actually just going back and kind of looking at his stats, and he finished his career with 10 touchdowns. The career high in catches for him for a season was 33 for Damier Byrd when you go back to his college career. And so a very solid career. He only had his freshman year was the one that kind of was odd. That was the year they started in Charlotte, I believe, and he was I want to say suspended for the game, but all of a sudden the NCAA had stepped in and had questions about his eligibility. And
that was a track thing, right?
Never really got off. Well, it was a couple of different things, but it never really got off the ground. He only had one catch, but his sophomore year had 14 catches and 3 touchdowns. His junior year was his highlight year, 33 catches, 4 touchdowns, and then his senior year, 20 catches and 3 touchdowns. So a pretty respectable career for him overall when you sit there and break it down, 67 catches overall and 10 touchdowns.
Would you say similar to Devin Taylor? That's how I see his career in college. About the same, because he was never the guy. Right? But he was pretty good and had really good projectable NFL skills,
right.
but never a focal point. I would say pretty similar to Devin Taylor, who we were talking about the other day from the defensive side of things for the Gamecocks, who's now gone on to several years with the Detroit Tigers, will play for the New York Giants this year. Superstar intern over there, Dakota Watson, you wanted to pitch in with the discussion there, the Carolina Panthers receiving core.
Yeah, I was just going to remind you that they did just draft Curtis Samuel, so that's going to be a little bit tougher for Damier to be like the speed guy if Curtis Samuel's now going to be there.
Second round pick out of Ohio State, dealing with a hamstring injury right now, one of the reasons why he didn't play last night. We all know around here, Debo Samuel, the most recent example of hamstrings and receivers and things not going well. Bruce Ellington dealing with it as well in the NFL, why he doesn't have a job right now.
Well, you know, but I still think Damier Byrd's got us. When you talk about their receiving, I could see him fitting in there in terms of being another speed guy along with Curtis. And we'll see how Samuel, his health and what he does throughout the preseason camp. But even if I feel like if he can put together another game and a half here for the Panthers. And it'll be kind of interesting what the Panthers might want to do with Damier Byrd. Do you kind of all of a sudden start to hide him a little bit for fear that maybe other organizations go, okay, they've got something sitting there. Let's see if we can get him out of Charlotte.
You can't hide a guy after you scored two touchdowns. You're the only game playing that night.
Yeah. Tonight, by the way, Broncos and Bears. NFL Network. Just there's a whole bunch of them tonight, but they won't want on television. So you talk about only game on. I don't know what stock GMs like that put into.
I don't think much at all.
Okay, so but that goes back. You say you can't hide a guy. If you don't maybe put stock into one game, but you put stock into a whole preseason camp. And it's not the first time. Damier Byrd last year had one catch for 16 yards at the very end of the season against Tampa Bay. It's so he's been hanging around that franchise. I mean, his name, I think, is one that could resonate a little bit in other front offices as a guy. Let's bring him in. He's got a great chance of making our 53-man roster. We'll see what happens with him. But certainly for him, a great start to the season last night. You hope he can stay healthy, and then you hope he's got a chance to find his way onto that receiving rotation.
We're off to a fun start this morning as well, talking about some football from last night. A bunch of Gamecocks, a bunch of former Clemson players in action for the Carolina Panthers and the Houston Texans. I guess the Texans, they said they have 5 former Clemson players, I think, on their roster right now. DJ Reader, I was a bit surprised, is really charged, going to get a lot of playing time, it looks like. He was in the starting lineup. And, you know, last year I felt like the Texans went with Vince Wilfork in the middle and then Clowney and Watt on the edges a lot of times in their defensive scheme. Wilfork is now retired, so it looks like Reader's going to get a lot of playing time in there. Didn't even see what Ben Boulware did. I noticed he did not get any early playing time for the Carolina Panthers. He was just kind of shadowing on the sidelines there with Luke Kuechly. I'm looking at the box score. I do not see him doing anything. Captain Munnerlyn, former Gamecock, did play and played pretty well. They had a pretty good story on at halftime. I saw about the return for him and Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers, another Panther who did not play last night, but Munnerlyn coming back, about the complete different routes that Munnerlyn took to the NFL as opposed to Peppers. And an interesting scene last night. I do not see any stats at all for one Ben Bulware. I did see where you took a shot at him on the Twitter yesterday, sir.
Who did?
That was you, I believe.
I did.
About whether or not he was going to hit Deshaun Watson and what might happen after the play.
That was a shot?
I think that was a shot. Yeah.
How was it a shot?
That Deshaun Watson should not be worried about actually getting hit during the play. He should be worried about what happens
after the play. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I don't think that's a shot. That's just pointing out that there might be a little history there of some antics following tackles or sacks, and that if he gets a chance around Watson should probably be a tad bit careful.
And you mentioned the PGA Championship. They mentioned on the broadcast last night that was the reason they're playing last night's game as the only game in the NFL on Wednesday night was because the PGA Championship starts today up in Charlotte Quail Hollow. The poll question today, the Frank's Discount Tire poll question, at Tim Hill 107.5 on Twitter, where you can officially vote who will win the PGA Championship. We got votes for all four options already early on this morning. That puts me in a good mood. That makes me think we're off to a good start. So four options. You got three individuals and the field. Your first individual is the guy who won the last major, Jordan Spieth, going for the career Grand Slam. Then a guy who's had plenty of success at Quail Hollow right behind him, Rory McIlroy, who's also won three career Grand Slam tournaments, or three career majors. And the world's number one from just down the street here in Irmo, Dustin Johnson, your other option. So Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Dustin Johnson. And then your final option is the field. Right now, the field leading the way, Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy tied for second, and Jordan Spieth in last. I would love to see Spieth win, by the way. I think that would be the best thing for golf. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that line of thinking, that it would be the best thing for the game of golf?
Yeah, I could get on board with that, because you start to establish a dominant figure again, and I think dominance and...
It's not starting to establish, by the way. He would be the youngest career Grand Slam winner. He would pass Tiger Woods, be the first guy to win four tournaments at the age of just over 24. I think Tiger was 24 in 6 months or something.
But I think, and here's the thing, and it goes back to the Tiger, we don't like, a winner is polarizing. You think about the Cowboys, you think about the Yankees, you think about the Lakers, you think
about individuals. LeBron James
is polarizing. And so you're right. What happens then is you kind of draw the casual fan in that wants to see this winner and decide whether you like him or not. And Spieth has some characteristics that are unlikable.
Absolutely. He's intense.
He is intense. He's got kind of almost
he's not afraid to pout a little bit.
That's exactly what I was going to say. A temper tantrum type attitude at times. Spieth has some things where people could easily go against him. Now, he's young, like you said, and he's charismatic. And we've got they were showing this morning the chip in, I think, what was it, from whichever tournament it was this year?
Hartford,
where he chips in and goes up and does the
Travelers,
the hip bump.
That was impressive. You're so, still not impressed with that celebration?
I mean,
for a golfer, ultra athletic.
Yeah, so that's exactly what came to my mind when I saw that, ultra athletic. But Spieth, so he wins, and you're right, some of the things that he will have claimed, and I think also the fact that the conversation will start to move toward, can he catch Tiger? Can he then catch Jack?
It's a legit conversation right now.
Right.
It puts him in the lead if he wins this thing.
Yeah.
It puts him out in front, as he is beyond the pace that Tiger set. And I never thought I would say that about anyone. And I think because we hear Jordan Spieth speak beyond his years, he doesn't act like he's 24 years old.
Right.
You don't hear him talk and say, oh yeah, he's a 24-year-old guy. And he talks like he's a 40-year-old CEO somewhere. And because he looks older than he is, he takes off his hat, he's got the hair does not look like a 24-year-old, like a lot of 24. For instance, he doesn't look like Ricky Fowler. He's a lot younger than Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler looks a lot younger. All those components thrown in, and then you have if you can have another guy, let's remember too, he's not the world's number one golfer right now.
Right.
Dustin Johnson is. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you can keep other guys up there, Rory McIlroy, another guy to sit here and challenge him, the best thing I think for golf would be if these three guys ended up being at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday and battle it out, and Jordan Spieth winning. I think that would be, if the PGA could write the script, that's how they would write it. Now, I would be happy with just if these three guys, maybe another big name was thrown in the mix. I would like to see Mickelson maybe involved just from a history standpoint and for his force of personality as well. If you had all those guys involved on Sunday, no matter who ended up winning, it would be good for golf. But especially good for golf, I think, right now would be a Spieth win in Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm with you on
that. That would change the narrative completely because I thought golf was in big trouble until Spieth just won.
Really?
The British Open. I know you said that it was healthy and there's a lot of different guys up there, but without the big narrative and with the huge gap, the huge shoes to fill now that Tiger Woods is no longer basically a part of the game, it was a big drop off.
It would be interesting. You're right. You never thought you'd see someone as dominant as Tiger Woods. And I think that the thing was Spieth has been kind of up and down at times as he's kind of tried to find himself, and you're right, he's a young golfer, but if you win this on a tour that is much more difficult today than it was when Tiger Woods was playing at that age, then it starts to create a narrative. And I wonder, though, the thing about Tiger Woods was his dominance and the way he won tournaments drew the casual golf fan to the television. Does Jordan Spieth have that attractability? Does he have that drawing power to draw the casual fan to the television set to watch? And we'll see, but it should be a lot of fun up there. They've really worked on that course. I believe they moved the Wells Fargo to Wilmington this past year in an attempt to allow Quail Hollow to be prepared for this. And so I think it's an opportunity again for Charlotte to take a step forward with Quail Hollow and showcase that. I've been up there a couple times. I can't say that as I've walked through the gates, I've been impressed. I've liked that venue, but I can't say that of all the ones that I've been to that it would be at the top or near the top. Now, granted, I've been to some really, really good ones, but I'm kind of interested to see how Quail Hollow plays this week.
Ryan Sacco weighing in this morning on the Shepherd's Glass inbox. He said, just a random thought, but whoever wins this year's PGA Championship could win, actually, if they defended their championship, to within less than a year. That's not quite right because that move from the PGA Championship from this time of year to earlier in the year in May is not going to go down until 2019. Mm. So it's not next year's PGA that will be moved up. It's the year after that. These golf tournaments are awarded way in advance. Right. One of the reasons is, like for Quail Hollow, they did a lot of work. I remember down in Kiowa when they had the PGA several years ago, there was a lot of work that went into that. A lot of it had to do with stuff you would never think about. It was about how to get that many people in there.
Exactly.
And where they would sit, and then how that has to do with like natural protected areas and all this logistic stuff that just made my brain hurt when it was just brought up from the tournament organizers. So a lot of stuff goes into that. And at Quail Hollow, they changed the course. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1, 2, and 3, I think, are a lot different than they used to be. They still have the Green Mile, which I think will continue to be some of the best dramatic endings that we've seen. We've seen some great ones there through the years. And I'm hoping that we're going to see something similar here if you have some big names in contention at the PGA Championship. And if you have Jordan Spieth and history kind of in the balance as well. We'll see. That's supposed to get going a little later on this morning. They've had some rain earlier in the week, but the course has been playing very difficult. I know that Spieth said yesterday in his press conference that if it continues to play how it's played during the practice rounds, it will be one of the most challenging courses that the tour has seen this season. The NFL, relatively interesting last night. Charlotte hosting the Carolina Panthers and Houston Texans game. A lot of local connections with us for former Gamecocks, Jadeveon Clowney, Jonathan Joseph with the Houston Texans, Captain Munnerlyn over on the Carolina Panthers side. Damir Bird, though, the headliner for sure, with a couple of touchdown catches for the Panthers, helping them win 27-17. The debut of Deshaun Watson getting, I guess, more of the national attention. And as I was watching it, I didn't quite, I guess I understand that media hype. People around football know Deshaun Watson and were certainly looking forward to his pro debut, but an exhibition game being what it is, seeing that Tom Savage played most of the first quarter, I believe it was. He ended up playing pretty well for the Texans and is the starter going into the season. But Watson playing for the first time in an NFL uniform, I get that he's a headline kind of guy. Christian McCaffrey also making his NFL debut. I'd say less than spectacular, but pretty solid. Plenty of reason for optimism for the future for both of those guys, I think, after last night's performances. Watson going 15 out of 25, ended up running for a touchdown. So a good start to the year, I think, and didn't see any kind of major injuries. I know the Panthers had a defensive lineman, Vernon Butler, go down early on in the ballgame. He did not look happy. They're hoping for good news out of there. It looked like it could be a knee injury to the big defensive lineman out of Louisiana Tech in his second year. But overall, pretty entertaining and really good for a guy like Damier Byrd, who has hung on with the Panthers for years now, but has done it, has kind of teetered on the edge between the practice squad and becoming active for a few games. He did end up with one catch, I think, on last season. But with a guy like Ted Ginn Jr. no longer part of the franchise, Philly Brown, I believe, also gone this year up in Carolina. They did draft a wide receiver in the second round out of Ohio State and Curtis Samuel, so you can expect him to make this year's team. But Byrd with an opportunity, and he took advantage of it last night, especially with that big 50-yard touchdown early on.
Well, took advantage of it, but I mean, I'd have to go back and look at the stats. I felt like he had a good preseason last year. Now the question is, can he get on a 53-man roster? Whether it's with Carolina or not, I don't want to say the clock is ticking, but you know for him, he wants to get onto an active roster and get paid like an active NFL player, not a scout team member. And look, apparently the Panthers have seen something in him to keep him around the organization, keep him within there, with kind of like last year, they brought him up late in the season. He played the January 1st game against Tampa Bay, the season finale, and as you mentioned, had the one catch for 16 yards. So, again, kind of, I don't want to say a roster turnover there in terms of the wide receiver position, because you still have Funchess and Benjamin, and then you draft Curtis Samuels, but certainly the opportunity to get into the mix there, maybe for that fourth spot, maybe for that fifth spot, something that I think Damier Byrd's got a great chance at doing. And
also, he can contribute on special teams. He's the punt returner.
Because of
his
speed, yeah. So there's some things there. And I think right now, coming out of last night, there's still three preseason games to go, and a lot of things can happen. But you feel like it's not sticking with the Panthers. He's done that. It's now making the 53-man roster for mm-hmm. him, and we'll see if he's able to pull that off.
What about on the other side of things now? Deshaun Watson, a very popular guy. And I came in this morning, our security guard outside the studios here is reading the USA Today sports page, I think, and the headline is Deshaun Watson makes NFL debut. It was pretty good last night, 15 out of 25. Tom Savage, though, has been declared the starter already. Mm-hmm. You know what the Texans did, moving up 13 picks, I believe it was, in the first round to get Deshaun Watson. You know, in the current NFL climate, and it used to be, a decade ago, 15 years ago, that you do everything possible not to play a rookie quarterback.
Right.
Got to give him at least a year. That used to be the traditional mindset. Here in the last several years, it's almost the exact opposite. It's if you're going to invest in these guys, you've got to get them on the field and get your money's worth starting basically as soon as possible. What do you think last night's debut did for Watson and Houston in their quarterback situation?
Right? I think it's twofold. I think it makes them feel good about Tom Savage because of how he played. Maybe you have an insurance policy there if you wanted to get rid of him and trade him, if you feel great about Deshaun Watson. I mean, we talked about teams are looking for pocket passing quarterbacks. Look at what the Miami Dolphins just did. That's been part of the discussion for the early part of the week. So if you have and look at what you've been able to get back. I mean, remember Brock Osweiler at this time last year was considered the savior, I guess, mm-hmm. for the Houston Texans because of how good that defense was supposed to be or is, and they just needed to be needed someone to be the trigger man of the offense, and you have some weapons there that you can really rely on in terms of offensively. So I think Tom Savage playing good last night gives you the opportunity to bring Deshaun Watson along slowly, whereas also Deshaun Watson playing well gives you the option that when Tom Savage or if Tom Savage falters, you can instantly go right to Deshaun Watson. But it's one game. And again, it was against backups. It was with backups. But we'll see as he continues to progress, because I'm guessing he's going to get the majority of the snaps over the next three games. I'm thinking when you break down the snap count, they want to see what they've got in him going into the regular season, because that's a playoff team. I mean, that's not a team that's building for the future. That's a team that thinks that they're set to compete and win right now. With that defense, that the window is open right now, you don't have time to go, okay, 3 or 4 years down the line, that's when we're looking at a Super Bowl. I think Houston is thinking we need to have this thing ready to go now.
The Frank's Discount Tire poll question up and rolling at Tim Hill 107.5 on Twitter, where you can officially vote. More than 100 votes in already this morning. What do you think is leading the way, sir? You got four options of who will win the PGA Championship, three individuals, Spieth, McIlroy, or Dustin Johnson, and then the field. Who do you think's leading?
I voted for Spieth, but really? I'm going to go Field. I think the field, without looking, I didn't look mm-hmm. at the
46% of the vote right now going to the field.
Because the field, technically, you would have
everybody else. Technically.
Well, technically, yeah. But I'm thinking you would have Fowler, who everybody's, is it Hideki Matsuyama?
Matsuyama just won over
okay,
the weekend.
Okay, it was fantastic on Sunday. Goes
Bridgestone,
out,
yeah, dominated.
And then you got, you know, obviously you got Kuchar, who's playing
sorry,
really
who?
Well. Kuchar, I'm sorry.
Thank
For
you.
Some reason I felt the need to emphasize the R in that. Kuchar, he's playing really well.
Or if you're a pirate, Kuchar.
I was just going to keep rolling along, and I don't know why I emphasized the R in that, but...
It might be because you're wearing an eye patch this morning. I don't know, with the peg leg.
It was Thursday. Eye patch Thursday.
So. Everybody knows it's Pirate Thursday, sure.
Watched dodgeball last night.
So you would vote for Spieth?
I would Spieth. That's where I voted. I think he's hot. I think he's... and for some reason, there's kind of a buildup to this, and you go back, I think he's... I don't know. That's the guy that I picked. I think he's hot. Actually, we threw Dustin Johnson in there, but that would be who I think is second on the list. Due to being able to come out of nowhere and maybe make a run.
See, I think McIlroy is probably the guy most likely to win. I think his odds might be the best out of these three guys, Spieth, McIlroy, and Johnson, because he's won there at Quail Hollow and because he consistently has shown the ability to play well on that course. Now, I know the course is a little different. It's not the same exact course that he won at. They right. tweaked it. They tweaked the first three holes in particularly. Not tweaked them. They've changed them. And this is a different deal. It's a major. But I think in golf in particularly, when you have a comfort level at a place, and it's not just 1 through 18, it's where you stay. It's the environment you feel like. That's why I think the Masters is so interesting each and every year mm-hmm. because it's the same place. Everybody comes back to everybody starts the major season off in the same place, and they most likely stay in the same house and they have the same routine, and it makes it more fun for me as opposed to going to a place for the first time and being kind of in a foreign environment. For American golfers in particular at the British Open, it is a foreign environment, but McIlroy's comfort level in this event, and I think he is probably extra motivated about the recent uptick in the Jordan Spieth talk about where he fits as one of the game's greatest. I think McIlroy certainly wants to be in that conversation. He's caught a lot of heat recently about the importance of golf in his life now. Mm-hmm. I think because his results haven't continued to be amazing, I think we're going to see an extra motivated Roy McIlroy this week. Now, whether that turns into him playing well, I have no idea, but I would vote here, like most of you have voted, by the way, in the field, just because of the odds of golf right now.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, the easy way up. Gotcha.
But if I have to pick one of those guys, I'll pick Roy McIlroy. Dustin Johnson just tweeted out earlier this morning that his game is feeling more and more comfortable. He's feeling better about his game. And he tweeted out earlier in the week, I saw, that it feels like a home event to him because it's so close to here in Columbia. And I'm sure a bunch of family and friends have made the relatively short trip up to Charlotte for him this week. All three of these guys, I love watching them play for different reasons. I feel like Dustin Johnson, most of us amateurs can identify with him to the effect that he can get a really good score on a hole, and then the very next hole, it can be a really bad score, and it can go wrong in a hurry. A lot of us can't identify with his approach that he can really keep golf in a different perspective and say, yeah, it's just golf, no big deal. Because that's where I think we identify with maybe Spieth's intensity and his ability to throw a fit on every other hole where things go wrong. And then McIlroy has just so much natural ability. He can excite us really quickly and come up with, go on a run that's tough to compete with. I like all three of those guys. I hope they're all in contention this week and makes things really interesting. Wow. The interesting article that we were talking about going into the break, by the way, was about college football coaches and what they've signed. Did you see what Steve Spurrier, one of the most interesting things that he signed was?
I did not catch.
A pacemaker.
Yeah, that's right. Pacemaker for him.
It had been removed. They go out.
Well,
that
would have been awkward. Yeah.
Dabo Swinney says he signed a dog named Dabo. It was a service dog, and he signed the vest, I guess. Some interesting ones. Brett Bielema, we were talking to Greg Bohannon, Arkansas fan, and Bielema is the one who had an issue with signing a prosthetic arm, I believe it was.
Yeah, that'd be a little.
He did not want to do that at first, and then so that the person, the Arkansas fan, was very, very adamant that he signed the prosthetic arm. So he did it.
There are certain things, because I think we've discussed this before. Autographs are not a big part of my sports collection, nor do I really. But like say if you were to get the 18th hole flag at Quail Hollow or at the back, or and that's actually, and I say that's pretty specific, but I've seen people who will go to the gift shop and purchase the flag and have them sign, have a golfer sign the flag.
Yeah, I think in golf it exists more than any other sport right now. Autographs. Baseball, I guess you still do it probably batting practice and balls. But for celebrities, I don't think it exists near to the level that it used to, because you have cell phones and people just try to grab you and take a quick picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to getting your autograph, which is what it is.
I like Lane Kiffin's. Did you see Lane Kiffin's, what they asked him to sign?
Yes, that was amazing.
It
happened last year or the year before when he was with Alabama, right?
Right. They asked him to sign the blocked. It was a photo of the blocked Terrence Cody blocking the Tennessee field goal at the very end. They asked him to sign. Of course, Lane Kiffin was the coach of Tennessee on that day, and they're getting him to sign. They wanted him to sign Roll Tide, and he's like, I don't even know if I'll sign it, but I'm not going to sign Roll Tide. But
as he's wearing his Alabama stuff, getting paid millions of dollars by Alabama,
very, very, but
classic Lane Kiffin.
And that's one thing I'll say, that a picture of a guy of a certain moment and getting somebody like a Spurrier, a coach, sign. I kind of understand that. More of a collector's memorabilia than I would. But, yeah, I'm kind of let me just take a picture and throw it up. And
the best story from this ESPN.com article about college football coaches and their dealings with fans and autographs, in my opinion, comes from James Franklin, the former Vanderbilt coach, now Penn State coach, says he was at a Penn State alumni event. He went to take a quick break, and he gets a tap on the shoulder as he's standing and relieving himself in the bathroom. And then he's like, can you give me a minute? And the guy just moves like 5 feet back and is waiting for him. Then
stares him down
as he's washing his hands. And he makes sure, I mean, that's a fan.
Would have only been more uncomfortable had the guy walked over and locked the door to the bathroom to make sure that Franklin couldn't walk out. Franklin told that story, but I feel like, and we've got Will Muschamp coming up here in about 20 minutes. I feel like that he's not the only one. I feel like that happens way more to celebrities, coaches, than they want to let on. They just don't want to tell that story because, they might get up and go use the restroom or something. Somebody's eating dinner. And all of a sudden it makes it okay, right? Yeah.
Somebody else is here, like, all right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stand in the bathroom. It's got to happen eventually. He's got to come over here.
He's got to come in. He's got to, yeah.
And then I can.
You keep sending waters or drinks over to his table. It's a plan.
Now that sounds like you might have done this before. Now I'm a little concerned.
Might have happened to me.
Right, that's happened to you all the time.
Oh,
sure.
These people, nice people. Yeah, okay.
Again, if you have some questions you would like us to pose to Will Muschamp, we'll be happy to do that as long as we deem them as being respectable questions, as opposed to, do you listen to the show, Coach?
I do not listen to you.
Which I think was fabricated.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of it coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Sammy just hit us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox about our poll question today. He says, look out for Lucas Glover, Wesley Bryan, and Charlie Hoffman. I'm impressed that Sammy, being a Clemson fan, did go with the obvious Clemson connection and the major winner of Lucas Glover, but then he came backed it up with a former Gamecock and Wesley Bryan. Charlie Hoffman has been playing tremendously recently, by the way, but he doesn't seem to be able to close out tournaments. I would say, watch out for him to be in the mix and towards the top of the leaderboard on Saturday especially.
Yeah, Wesley Bryan should be teeing off here within the next 5 to 6 minutes. Tee times have gotten underway up at Quail Hollow, so we'll kind of keep an eye on that in our number three. Their defending champion of the PGA Championship. Do you know who it was?
Last year, who won the PGA? No, that's what I said.
Golf. Yeah, Jimmy Walker. Last year. How about that? Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I think Jordan Spieth winning the British Open was huge for golf. We'll see if he can stay in contention. We'll have some live updates for you. Wesley Bryan going here in the next few minutes or so. Carolina football coach Will Muschamp joining us. Coach, thank you for your time. First of all, did our intern who's producing today and gave you a call, Dakota Watson, how do you qualify his phone demeanor? I'm sure it's much less than Jen Jensen's would have been, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was not exactly what Jen puts on the table there, but he was good.
Okay. We'll coach him up. We'll do our best here. Through several practices now, I guess you're going into practice number 9 today, a little later on. What are you seeing from your team, especially compared to this time last year?
Well, you know, Tim and Bill, I really, you know, the culture of the program continues to move in a positive direction. And what I mean by that is the buy-in, the expectation, understanding how we practice, how we're going to go about our business, less questioning of why we're doing something, understanding that this is the way it's going to be done. I told our team before the night we reported for camp that the championship teams I've been on, one of them being a national championship team and the other one losing in a national championship and multiple conference championships, they embraced camp. They embraced the grind. They embraced the work. They embraced practice. The average teams I've been a part of bitched about camp. And so my biggest question to our guys is, which one are we going to be? And for the most part, to this point, going in practice nine, which is still early in my opinion, you know, we've embraced the grind. We've embraced camp. And that's been exciting to me about the way our guys have gone after. They understand the practice schedules aren't changing. We're not going to change because we don't want to do it. It's, you know, you feelings are a choice. You make a decision on how you feel every morning when you get up for work or when you go to practice. And so far that our guys, I really feel like for the most part, have attacked it pretty well.
For you, this is the sixth year as a head coach, your second at South Carolina. How is this year for you personally, not the team, not your assistant coaches, but your comfort level this year, not having to deal with maybe a quarterback battle like you did last year with Orth and McElwain, but knowing who your guy is and just knowing the players, knowing the practice schedule. How is it different for you personally in year two?
Well, I think your familiarity with the roster is a huge part of it, is knowing your guys, having recruited now, you know, two classes of guys that you know those guys very well, to be able to go through the recruiting process, to be in the living room with the family, to see where your players come from, to understand who they are, that's a huge part of it. And then to see how I know how our guys are going to react in front of 80,000 people. For the most part, I was going meeting with our defensive staff yesterday. We're going to have nine guys that are new faces on our football team that will be contributing some in a major way to our defense. So we need to be really careful about what we're asking them to do. I mean, because at the end of the day, that's nine guys. I really don't know how they're going to respond in front of 80,000 people up in Charlotte. So we got to be careful about installation and what we're asking them to do communication-wise and those sort of things. We've got a brand-new group of specialists as a punter, a place kicker, a snapper. So, I mean, all of those things that we've got to take into account as far as the new faces are concerned. But certainly having Jake is a calming factor for our football team, not just for our offense, but for our entire team, for the confidence that our players have in him in the job that he does. But they also see his work ethic. He understands how to be a quarterback, and there a lot goes into that, and he certainly understands that part of it. The skilled people we have offensively, Debo Samuel, Brian Edwards, Shy Smith's been a freshman that's come in here and done a fantastic job. Hayden Hurst, the three backs that we have, I think you look at the running back and tight end competition is two of our best position groups because of competition. We got some guys in there that can play that are good football players that are pushing for playing time, and that's been exciting to see.
Will Muschamp joining us this morning here, the early game, 107.5. The game, as you get ready for Saturday's scrimmage, it's a closed scrimmage, fans not allowed. How much one-on-one action, ones versus ones, will you try to incorporate this Saturday to learn about some of those newcomers that you're talking about that you need to find out about?
100%. I don't understand the concept of, you know, ones versus the rest. I mean, at the end of the day, you need to be real and you find out what your guys can do against the best you got. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to put some guys in some situations, especially some of the young guys that you alluded to see what they can do. But we got a lot of special teams works planned for Saturday, some live kickoff coverage, which we need to grossly improve from a year ago. And then a lot, you know, some coverage units, things that we need to work on. But everything we do is going to be good on good.
He's Will Muschamp, Carolina football coach, about a third of the way through preseason practice, joining us here on 107.5 The Game this morning. Coach, you came into this preseason saying that you weren't sure if you've ever been a part of a defense going into a preseason camp that had more question marks than this one. You just mentioned that you're going to have nine guys contributing this year on defense who you've never seen play in big boy college football. What have you learned a third of the way through preseason practice here about those question marks coming in?
Well, I think from a front perspective, we've got some guys that I think can certainly, I think Kobe Smith had a good camp. I think Javon Kinlaw has shown the ability to help us this year. We need more guys to step up here. Kier Thomas has done a nice job. Aaron Sterling as a freshman is going to play for us this year. Is a good football player. Danny Fennell's continued to come along. Brad Johnson's going to play for us as a true freshman. He's a good football player. At the linebacker position, I think Sherrod Green's going to be a really good player. He's a guy that's got tremendous instincts, very bright, very intelligent. He and Eldridge Thompson are our two backup linebackers, and they're going to be playing, and they're going to be good players, but those guys have shown a promising future. Keyshawn Nixon is a guy that I'm excited about as you see him coming along. DJ Smith had an outstanding camp. Chris Lamons and Jamarcus King and Rashad Fenton at the corner position have done some nice things, and the two freshmen, Taven Jackson and Jam Williams, are going to be really good players. So, I mean, again, the ability's there. It's just a matter of the experience factor, and that's something we've got to take into account as we plan and we install and how much we're going to ask them to do.
On the flip side of that, you've got a pretty good group of returning receivers. Brian Edwards is a guy that I actually think in fall camp has not been discussed as much because you have Shai Smith or Trey Smith. Debo Samuel went to Media Day. Hayden Hurst. What have you seen from Brian Edwards that leads you to believe he's ready to make the next step? This was a guy that was highly recruited, had a great opening game, but I think has almost got lost in the shuffle because some of the excitement about the other offensive players.
Well, he had over 100 yards in his first college football game,
right?
Up against Vanderbilt. So he's an outstanding player. He's an even better person. I think Brian, to me, is gotten a lot stronger. I think that he's a very physical, big receiver. He's a very difficult matchup in man-to-man. He's got really good vertical speed, and he's got great finish ability at the top end of a route as far as his ability to finish the plays, as far as catching the ball. He's got really good ball skills down the field. But he's a hard matchup, man. He's a big guy, and he can bim you around on the line of scrimmage. Very competitive, very smart. He's had an outstanding camp, and I've been really excited about all of our receiving group. Again, we've got good competition there. Terry Googers is a guy that's continued to progress the right way. Is a very dependable guy. Debo's having a good camp. Shai Smith or Trey's going to be a good player. And then Chad Terrell is another guy. He's a freshman that I think in the last 3 days has made tremendous strides as far as being able to contribute to our football team.
Mentioned a lot of individual names. One of our listeners, Sean, wanted an update on Shamik Blackshear. At one time, I think the number one recruit in the state of South Carolina, has gone through some issues since then. Where is Blackshear in his progress on your defensive line?
He's done some really good things in pass rush and really shown some flashes as far as that's concerned. Got to be a little more consistent in the run game. But a guy that we certainly need for him to continue to step up and help us.
Again, Will Muschamp joining us this morning. One thing I wanted to ask you real quick before we move on is the difference in Tua. You've been around football for a long time. Obviously, the NCAA has implemented rules to kind of change the way Tua-days are done, I think from when you played even to what they do now. Has it been better for the players? Do you wish you had a little bit more time in terms of practice and the actual what it used to be, the morning practice and the afternoon practice?
It really hasn't changed, guys. I mean, I, from a standpoint for us, the day off I think is good for the players. Yesterday you have to have one day off within a 7-day window, and yesterday was our day off. Our players, the only time they came over here was for meals and if they needed to have treatment. So that's the only time they came over, and then we took them bowling last night and they had some karaoke. And Kobe Smith, wow, he was impressive last night on the karaoke machine. Really very impressed with him. Donnell Stanley, he sang some country songs for us, so that was impressive as well. But our guys really enjoyed that. I think from a team building standpoint, I think it's really important for them to get outside of the football mold to visit with each other and have a good time and relax a little bit. So that was a lot of fun. But probably 5 years, because you couldn't have a two-a-day back-to-back. Our two-a-days have been a helmets practice, more of a walk-through tempo than a banging practice like I was used to when I was in college. So I don't know that it's changed a lot. We still are allowed to have walkthroughs at night, and so we typically, most of our practices are in the morning, and then we have meetings through the afternoon and then walkthroughs at night to kind of go through the installation, any corrections we need to make. So it's not a whole lot of change to me. I think you have plenty of time to get what you need to get done. They allow you to have 29 practices. We're probably going to practice 25 to 26 times, depending on where we are health-wise as we move through camp, because that's going to be critical for us to be healthy in that first game, September 2nd.
Oh, he's Will Muschamp joining us here on the early game this morning, and boy, did he bring up a question now that I have to know. Mm-hmm. All right, if the coaching thing does not work out for one of your assistant coaches, who is most likely to be a lounge karaoke singer at, say, a bowling alley or something? I don't want the players. You just gave us those. I want the coach who's most likely to be a lounge karaoke singer.
Wolford strikes me as that guy.
Oh, he's got a gravelly voice.
I think I'd have to go with Wolfie on that. Oh. I've never seen him sing personally, but he certainly has the personality to captivate a room, and I'm sure he's got an outstanding voice.
Yeah, I can see that. What did Kobe Smith give you last night, by the way? He's your sophomore defensive end from Georgia. What did he go with you that made you so impressed?
He went with some slow rhythm and blues, and was outstanding. He coupled it with some dance moves, which were outstanding. Okay. So I was very impressed with Kobe last night.
He's a sport and entertainment management major. That sounds like he's going well into the entertainment part of that.
Well, he got an A for entertainment last night. He was outstanding.
I want to go back real quick. During the summer, the social media group put out, they're doing a great job. They put out a video of the guys coming to your lake house, and you've got like a hoverboard that goes up by water. Does that not concern you? I saw Jamarcus King like posing on that thing and then apparently getting off balance. Has Coach Muschamp been on that hoverboard?
Great question.
I don't think he'd get me up, to be honest with you. No, I haven't been on it. My wife, Carol, she saw it somewhere and she rented it. We don't really have it at the house there, and she rented it for the players, and we've rented it multiple times when the players have come over, and they love it. They love getting out on the water, and then I think, as I've said it before, I think it's good for them to see me as a father and a husband and not just as a coach and that part of it. We always have a good meal for them out there when they come out there, but they really enjoy it. The guys come out, love to come out fishing. They fish out there all the time, and we've been very fortunate to have the place we have. But that hoverboard it's a fun deal. My sons love it, and the players love it, so we'll continue to do it.
So good to see you as a father and a coach, not 20 feet above the lake, though, on the actual deal. That makes sense. Last question for you, Coach. A recent article, ESPN.com, college football coaches, the strangest autographs they've ever signed. You've been around a lot of avid football programs in your career. Wondering what's the strangest autograph you sign in your day?
I believe I was asked to sign a woman's back one time, and that was a little unusual, but certainly was interesting. But that was about it probably for me.
Did you have to go around moles, hair? Is that why it was the most interesting, or was this a
No, it was in a public setting, and it was a little uncomfortable, but that's the way it was. That's what they asked, so I did it.
Fair enough.
Okay, and he did it. I like it. Okay, if they request it, you do it. So not a whole lot off limits there, I guess.
No, hey, if they're not asking for your autograph, you got a problem. I have learned that part of it.
He's Will Muschamp, Carolina football coach. We appreciate your time, sir. Know you're busy this time of year. Good luck with the rest of preseason camp.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great day. Take care.
What did you think, Bill Gunter?
I was trying to make sure I don't know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not in terms of he opened up the thing talking about teams in the past that have either embraced fall camp or, as he said, have bitched about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Will Muschamp
just you went ahead and went with it.
Well, he said it.
at the FCC hearing. Yeah, sir, ma'am, he said it.
Yeah, Muschamp said it, as he said it. But I was paraphrasing. So what I think is, like, you can tell Will Muschamp's one of those guys, he loves fall camp. Like, he loves the practice. He everything about it. And he looks at his players and goes, you better love fall camp, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's none
if you don't, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah,
you better shut your mouth.
It goes back to, and we'll see how he does. He's still, as he said last year at this time, he was the coach of a 3-9 team. Well, he's the coach of a 6-7 team right now. They still have got to improve. They've got to get to 7 or 8 wins this year, I think, to continue moving in the right direction. But I always thought that he was the guy for the job because of his approach to the game. And that's what South Carolina needed at this time, both recruiting and not to knock Steve Spurrier, but I mean, Will Muschamp is 110% football pretty much all the time. You and I have kind of talked about that before, where he's focused 365 days a year. Steve Spurrier was kind of that old school coach where you coach for 9 months, you get a few months off.
No, he's famously like detached from football.
Exactly.
I mean, he went out of his way to say these guys have grind and spend time. You don't have to do
exactly
that, because he just is a different dude. I mean, no other college football coach had won a Heisman Trophy like him. None had gone on to the NFL and played for a bunch of years. He just came at it from a different angle. I think Will Muschamp is much more down the line these days. I mean, we've seen it in the SEC in particular with Kirby Smart, very similar type background. This is where college football coaching has gone, right? And you mentioned the social media and right. what Gamecock football has done there, the upgrade, the tremendous upgrade it's done. And that was completely necessary at this point with recruiting in 2017. Now, to me, some of the more interesting things he said were some of the guys he went out of his way to mention by name.
Right.
Specifically on the defensive side of the ball, freshmen. And he mentioned that those nine guys that he said that they have not played before that will have to contribute. So clearly he's already got his list.
Right.
I mean, he says that depth charts are overrated, but obviously he said nine. He didn't say eight or about 10 or a dozen. He mentioned nine.
But I'll tell you why, because you can point those guys out very quickly. On the mm-hmm. defensive line, he mentioned three of them, Brad Johnson, Aaron Sterling, and Javon Kinlaw. He mm-hmm. mentioned backup linebackers, Sherrod Green and Eldridge Thompson. That's five. Then you've got Jalen Dickerson, who was here in the spring. That's six, and then you've got Jamias Williams and Tavion Jackson. That takes you to eight, and so that
Keyshawn
leaves
Keyshawn Nixon being
the ninth. Thank you. So, I during the recruiting process, I think a lot of people would have looked at those nine guys in particular, especially the three junior college players, Kinlaw, Thompson, and Nixon, and said, okay, they're definitely going to play. Then Jalen Dickerson enrolled early and made the contributions in the spring. And he said, okay, he's probably in. You knew Jamias Williams was going to come in and be ready to go. That's five. The question was more of Sherrod Green or, you know, a few other guys here or there, Tavion Jackson, and it looks like they've stepped up enough. It'll be interesting. That's why I asked the one-on-ones for Saturday. How much, again, because how much do you allow them to go with each other? And certainly you want to learn about it, but how much do you allow them to go with each other to find out who's performing and who's doing what while also trying to not risk injury? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, look, they've been lucky so far, and that's kind of what fall camp is. You have guys who just simply get hurt just running and cutting. And so you have to, I think, also continue to monitor that. But the other thing that kind of caught my attention, because I feel like he's being overlooked to an extent, is Bryan Edwards. We've talked so much, you know, we heard the other
day. Wait a second. The thing that caught your attention was the question that you asked?
No, that's why I asked. But that's why I asked the question was Bryan Edwards.
I like his first response, or his initial response. He had more than 100 yards receiving in his first game in college.
Right, but think about what we've talked about leading into, going back to when did we play the McClendon audio? Yesterday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And our topic of conversation was Shai Smith or Trey Smith.
Because they're new.
And we've talked about Debo Samuel. And Hayden Hurst was at SEC Media Day.
Well, because I think he had a bit of a downslide towards the end of last year.
Exactly.
Right? But we learned after the year that in large part because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I think he's going to be a tremendous player. When I saw Kurt Roper talking about him the other day, how he immediately lumped Bryan Edwards in with Debo Samuel and Hayden Hurst as his three guys that he can really count on and move around and do different things with on offense. I think that tells you what you need to know from a coach's evaluation. And that first response from Muschamp saying he had more than 100 yards receiving in his very first game.
Also, I think I added that into the question. I think I made sure to point that out. We'll have to go back and listen to the
audio. Oh, he wasn't correcting
you.
He's just saying that's how highly he thinks of him, right. I think, or that's how proven this guy is already.
But I guess that's my point. Like, we talk about that offense, and it's almost like people mention the running backs, and they mention Bentley, and they mention Hayden Hurst and Debo Samuel, and then people kind of jump down to the Bryan Edwards was a key recruit 2 years ago who had at times great moments last year. And I think is a guy almost kind of being overlooked going into 2017 because you get excited for the shiny new toys. Well, the shiny new toys are Shai Smith and Trey Smith. And Jake Bentley certainly and Debo Samuel and Hayden Hurst having been at SEC Media Day and been out in front of the cameras. And then you talk about Eric Wolford coming in and the offensive line. So it's almost
you're going to go Lounsinger.
No, not yet. Okay. But Bryan Edwards, and that's a guy that I kind of fascinated to see make that jump from year one to year two.
Mm-hmm. How does the back come up as an option, by the way, when you're seeking an autograph? I mean, do you run out of everything? And you're just like, sign the back. Sign my back.
I feel like they were going in for, if it was a female, they were going in for the front. And they chickened out
okay.
at the last minute.
Maybe that was it.
Like you talk about Mike Leach and the article that you referenced and what he had to sign.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to mention that earlier. College football coaches article, strangest things they've signed. Mike Leach. I said James Franklin had the best story. He's got the most uncomfortable story, being tapped on the shoulder while in the bathroom. But Mike Leach probably has the best story. Would you like to recount it?
But Mike Leach, you feel like somebody should have taken a picture of it, but basically some young men approached him while he was sitting at a table signing autographs, I guess, at a school function, And he says they threw a bra on the table that, as Mike Leach said, could have held two volleyballs. And then he looked back behind, and the mother, was sheepishly standing back there. And he said, well, for the effort that was put in to bring that thing to him to sign, he felt he needed to sign it.
He's college football's best character, Mike Leach. Even if the story was completely made up, I appreciate it.
Which you start to wonder if some of his stories are not like completely right. made up, don't you, at some point? Like,
well, I think if you've ever talked to Mike Leach, you wonder if he's just making up everything he's saying, because he seems to reside
if it happened in a dream
on
and
a
he
different
thinks
planet.
It happened in a real life. Yeah.
But it's part of what makes college football great. Mentioned last night's NFL preseason game. Carolina Panthers beating the Houston Texans 27-17. To me, what I never take final scores away from these things. What I take away is when I see the starters play, or the rare starters who play, what I got from that. The Carolina defense, I thought, looked pretty good, forcing 2-3 and outs, I think, to start. The first three plays, Kaywon Short got to Tom Savage two of those three plays and sacked him, I think, on third down there. And Luke Kuechly played just those six plays. So after that, it's not what we're going to see this season, so I don't take a whole lot from that. So I don't know what you can take from Deshaun Watson's debut. I know one thing that Rooster P took from Deshaun Watson's debut when he was watching last night's Panthers-Texans game. He joins us now live on the Capital Hyundai, Capital Chevrolet phone lines, 404-6100, live, like we record any of these and put them on the hotline. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Where are you joining us from in our great country today on your 18-wheeler?
I'm in the great big state of Texas, almost into Dallas here. But Deshaun looked good last night, man. It looked real good. I mean, for first time in an NFL game, but I was really proud of the showing of some of the former the University of South Carolina players and some of the players from the upstate school there in South Carolina. But I just wanted to let some of these, I don't know what the deal was. They must be mentally challenged, Clemson fans, because they were confused wearing Clemson jerseys to an NFL game. I think they kind of got a little bit lost in the shuffle there or something. Don't believe I've ever saw that. If I have, I don't remember seeing somebody wear a NCAA jersey to an NFL game. So, upstate school fans, you're confused. You're confused. The guy's not even playing for your school anymore.
Well, could it be that they had five guys to choose from on the Texans roster at this point and didn't quite know what to do?
Yeah, I mean, why not put a number four Texans jersey on? That would make a lot more sense, but we know that those people in that upstate school they're just a little bit slow up there, so we'll pass that on and let them take it for what it's worth. So that's really all I had to contribute from Texas this morning, guys. So you have a good show. You're about done, but have a good rest of the show, guys.
Rooster P, ladies and gentlemen, getting his daily dig on Clemson from the beautiful state of Texas out there. If he's on the west side of Dallas right now, you can understand why he might be in a bit of a daze if you've ever been out there. I think I was out there with my dad one time. He said it was like driving off the edge of the earth if you've ever been west of Dallas.
Yeah, it sounds like a really long drive. Not one that I really care to make. That's why they make planes now and trains.
A couple of questions via the Shepherd's Glass inbox that did not get asked to Will Muschamp. You can decide whether or not we made the right call on this one. Clemson Sean, first of all, actually has a relatively decent one. He says, always interested to hear if a coach has any pregame rituals. Ask Muschamp if he has any. Well, we're not quite to the season yet, so didn't feel the need to ask him about pregame rituals when we're still more than three weeks out to an actual game. Joey Nichols hit us up and said, ask Will Muschamp if he would rather fight 100 duck-sized Tims or 10 horse-sized bills.
Ducks bite. I don't know if the horses bite.
Oh, yeah.
They've been bit by a horse.
And they kick.
That's true.
While I thought that was a tremendously thought-provoking question, I did not anticipate the same response from Will Muschamp today in the middle of preseason practice.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been, yeah.
We should have asked him if he was in the middle of scripting out practice number 26.
It's true.
Because he already.
I thought about asking
11.
Him if he's already had the meeting on uniforms for the first game. Mm. But then again, I thought the alternate uniform idea may not be the direction to take it in this morning.
Good call. Jimmy D says, ask Will Muschamp how he feels about 43-inch nameplates in the form of television monitors in the Texas locker room. I'm guessing he would have given us very similar a reaction that he did the other day, talking about he's not into new and shiny, but recruits are, so he could understand how that goes, but they're not probably anticipating 43-inch monitors as nameplates in anytime soon there at Williams-Brice. Richard, also watching last night's NFL game up in Charlotte with the Panthers and Texans, weighing in on the Capital Hyundai Capital Chevrolet phone lines. Good morning, Richard.
Morning, guys. I thought it was a pretty good game. I didn't expect for the Panthers just to come out and kind of throw the ball. They got that one touchdown. They looked pretty good, but that's not what I really called about. I called about, as a Gamecock fan, I'm always down for trolling. But that was if that's the best that somebody can do, you really made us look really bad, because that was probably one of the worst attempts to troll the Clemson Tigers I have ever heard in my Gamecock living life. I mean, you guys got to know when to push the button. I mean, he's trying everything he can to make those digs.
Wait, why am I getting blamed for this?
Why would there not be tons of fans wearing Clowney jerseys? Or maybe there's a Wisconsin fan who lives there and wears a J.J. Watt jersey. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem. I don't see anything big deal with Clemson fans wearing Deshaun Watson jerseys. And I'm a Gamecock fan living right here in Columbia. Been a longtime fan listener. And, I mean, just the way those upstate, I mean, that stuff is so played out. You make the Carolina fan base look like idiots when you get on the radio and you try to troll somebody when you really should just shut up. That's all I got to say.
Don't know if that's what
salty.
I would label. Yeah,
salty.
I don't know if that would be.
I don't think Richard's ever been out near Dallas in a truck. I can understand while Rooster P was not on top of his dig game, his trolling game. He's in a different world out there.
I've heard a lot worse. That makes fan bases look a lot worse.
But there is a reason that the phone lines did not light up with just Clemson fans all up in arms.
Good
this
point.
Morning. Like, oh, all right, that's all you got? Okay, we'll take it. PGA Championship update for you. Hideki Matsuyama, how about that? Just won last week at Bridgestone, 2-under through 2 already. He's part of an early three-way tie at 2-under through the first few holes there. Russell Knox and Chris Wood, the other guys up there. Former Gamecock Wesley Bryan parred his first two holes there. So he's at even par right now, tied for 7th in the early leaderboard up in Charlotte. By the way, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson have just teed off here in the last few minutes, so they're just underway there. And later today, some notable names teeing off. Lucas Glover goes at 12:35 at Quail Hollow. Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler, 1:35 today up in Charlotte, the PGA Championship. And that is what our poll question was about, since the fourth major teeing off today. And again, 2019 is when it's set to move back into the rotation of the majors and be major number 2 instead of major number 4. Who will win the PGA Championship? Simply the poll question, the Frank's Discount Tire poll question at Tim Hill 107.5 on Twitter. We gave you 4 options, 3 individuals, and then the field. The field ends up getting the number 1 place, first place votes. 44% is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. The field is how you weighed in today. Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Dustin Johnson, your 3 individual options. Spieth was trailing early on in this one, but he ends up winning as far as the most popular individual. 27% of the vote. Dustin Johnson gets 17% of the vote, and Rory McIlroy finishing in last place today, just 12% of the vote.
Not a lot of faith in, though, McIlroy. I do think he's got, if you were to put those in order, I would actually take Spieth, McIlroy, the field, and then Johnson. Dustin Johnson, just ever since, I hate to say it, that slip and fall or whatever happened at the Masters, just hadn't been right. He's been okay, but man, he was on such another level heading into the Masters and looked like he was poised for a massive, massive year. And whatever happened on that Wednesday night beforehand just seems to have really derailed what seemed like it was going to be a very, very strong season for him.
Should be interesting to follow things up at Quail Hollow for sure. This show was interesting as well. We started with a relatively, I would say, standard recap of the NFL preseason game that was last night. A bunch of former Gamecocks involved. Deshaun Watson's NFL debut, kind of the headline, but Damier Byrd, really the most productive player in that ballgame with a couple of touchdown catches. Then what Damier Bird's role will be with the Carolina Panthers moving forward. I think we both agree, Bill, that he has a really good chance of making this year's 53-man roster and contributing at wide receiver now that a couple of guys have moved on and they're evolving a little bit. That offense last night was certainly a good sign, but he needs to continue to perform here in the preseason.
I agree with you. You know, again, three more games, and if you want to watch tonight, Broncos and Bears. I'm sure Jen Jensen will be glued to the TV watching the NFL Network and the Chicago Bears. Hopefully she'll be able to text message us more clearly than she did last night to let us know she's doing okay.
We think
she's doing, or the dog text us, one of the two.
Looking forward to getting Jen back on the program, but Dakota Watson, you did fill in admirably today. You didn't completely screw up the entire show yet, anyway.
That's the only goal.
Made Muschamp hold for like 4 minutes prior to the interview.
Yeah, but he said you did okay.
Yeah, so, he gave me a shout-out technically on radio. I feel like I'm famous now. Yeah,
he would have redshirted you.
Didn't happen at all. If you missed any of our interview with Will Muschamp, you can catch it on our podcast page, 1075thegame.com. Also interviewed a professional fisherman today who's a big football fan, Greg Bohannon. The Forest Wood Cup going on at Lake Murray here in the next several days over the weekend. Good times.
Learned what a power fisher is.
We learned a lot today. That's rare. Early game, 107.5 The Game.